And welcome back to another issue of the Daily Dots. Got to start off with a mea culpa for yesterday. Chase was in the air from about half hour to from market close till about 5 p.m. So he wasn't viable. And during the same period of time, I had a client roadshow planned. We have a town hall meeting for all of our clients every quarter that we do via Zoom. And that way I can talk to all of our clients, all 1500 of them. And we send it out to all of our clients, but then we do a Q&A. So we had that yesterday and I had meetings up to, anyway, both of us were indisposed. That shouldn't happen very seldom. So hope that didn't throw you off, but it was kind of a bummer of a day not to do it, right? Because a lot of fireworks were going off. A lot of those factors were in play today, though, so we didn't really miss much. Yesterday made a whole lot of sense. Today really didn't, other than the fact that on a lot of different metrics today, you were a little oversold. Why do I say it made sense? look, you have the exact same dynamic happening right now that you had last year that drove last year down. Okay, you have the dollar index. Remember we told you when the dollar index gets above 105, that is a blinking red light. You went up another 0.5% on the DXY today, the dollar index. You're pressing 107 now. Nobody knows for sure, but usually when you get to this area, 110 is probably the odds on favorite for the DXY to hit. It could easily just fall back to 105. We'll have to keep an eye on that. Rates up significantly again. I believe we closed with the 10-year at 4.65. Oil up 4% on the day. When oil is going up, the dollar is going up, and rates are going up, everything around the world is making less money. So yesterday made a lot of sense. Today, on a fundamental basis, didn't. Remember, this is all happening into a market that is still trading at 25 times earnings, which is laughable. But it was pretty nuts today on a day like today. The stocks that were most impacted by what happened today was tech, and they were the only index that was green or meaningfully green. And not even then, it was small, I think 0.2% or something like that. and I think that was just a product of being oversold, probably some short selling or some short covering in there. Guys like us were shorting the NASDAQ at the last high of 14.3. I was kind of frustrated yesterday, and we monetized some of our shorts yesterday too. So that's probably what it was, a positioning deal. But the action that you saw yesterday, I think, was 100% justified by the move in rates. And all of that just did all of that. We did the same thing today plus more. The macro winds are not looking good. And then, like I said, valuation is a horrible timing mechanism. If you've tried to pick stocks based on value for any extended period of time, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But that's the other thing I will continue to say. I don't think that we're on the edge of some bear porn blowout crash or anything like that. I also don't think current market action makes any bloody sense. And I think to add some context to it, which is always important, if you saw this kind of market action with a market trading somewhere in the 16 to 18 times earnings, and people are like, well, the market's only trading at 18 times forward earnings. Guys, if I hear anybody cite forward earnings right now, I'm going to throw a water bottle at them. Okay. We have a joke in the industry. Forward earnings are what you use when you're trying to sell stocks, and trailing 12 month is what you use when you're trying to buy them. Okay. And the other thing is, I think forward earnings are particularly nonsense in this environment. For instance, you look at the forward earnings estimates over the last 6 months, they haven't really changed. They haven't been revised downward. Yet at the same time, yields are meaningfully higher, making new cyclical highs, and oil's bounced from 65 to 93. Dollar index has gone from 102 to 107. You want to know how the earnings estimates next year are complete nonsense? That right there. Those earnings estimates have not begun to come down, and they are down, right? Everything that drives them has gotten worse. As a matter of fact, if you look for comps, when was the last time we didn't see rates this high anytime last year, right? This is that nasty elixir that drove last year's action. And so I'll say the same thing I said last year. I have no idea. And Chase is still gone. He's in a conference in Colorado. That's who he's flying. He's nerding out between you guys and me. He's nerding out. Don't tell him I said that. But yeah, that's what we hire him for, right? He was all excited. He's going to a macro conference in Colorado. So for those of you that are thinking to become clients, if you want your money with people that are actually really obsessed with what they do, it's us. He gets more excited than that than going on vacation. But anyway, though, when those, and it's so pernicious, guys, and it's one of the things that's so pernicious is it just hasn't been seen very rarely, right? And it's especially pernicious, and I think it's going to have outside impacts on our economy. Why? Because our economy, you know, 60% of the revenues on the S&P 500 still coming from in the United States. But you go back 20, 30 years ago, I think that number was like 80%, okay? More importantly, and we've mentioned this a bunch of times, 40% of all revenues come from overseas. But for big tech, remember, the top 10 stocks in the S&P 500 make 30% of the weight. So they've got a really big sway on earnings. 58% of their revenues come from overseas. When the dollar is going up at the same time rates and oil are going up, they will make less profit than forecasted. Now, is that a 15% drop in profit? I'm not saying that. Like I said, I don't think we're on the precipice of some, you know, 50% epic meltdown from here. Do I see the ingredients for a 10% earnings increase next year? No, and we can't even model it. I don't know what these people are talking about. And by the way, at 26 times earnings, you better get a 10% increase in earnings. Because, this multiple expansion in the face of this is just mind-numbing. It really is. And what's mind-numbing about it and what's scary about it, even though we don't think you're looking at a really nasty outcome here, what is scary about it is the weaker things get in the underlying economy. And you know, again, it's not dropping like a rock, but it is weakening. You can see it on every metric, right? We were talking about on the last time, I believe it was on Monday. Was it year over year? Was it month over? Anyway, Chase had the data point. It was year over year, month over month, that debit card transactions were down 6%, which equates to about a 2% drop in consumer spending. You can't find anything out there on a macro level that's going to boost earnings. And guys, this is the classic case of everybody, and this is why people get killed in bear markets, is because everybody is looking at the data point that matters the least, price. They're looking at the markets. They're not looking at fundamentals. They're not looking at valuations. They're not looking at rates. They're not looking at dollar indexes. Why is the dollar index so pernicious? It's really not most of the time, because usually when the dollar goes up, commodity prices go down. So whatever developing economies get hit in terms of, you know, they're developing, right? So they need more access to raw materials, commodities, all that kind of stuff. Well, whatever take they hit in that cross currency, you know, game, right? They're getting the majority, if not all of it, back in cheaper commodity prices. So usually it's kind of offsetting. But when the dollar and oil is sucking money out of U.S. consumers' pockets, so are rates. And then it's going to be especially pernicious for emerging markets or developing economies, because they need the resources, right? Because they're still building infrastructure and buildings and things like that. They're still, you know, they're not a technology and service-based economy like a fully developed economy like ours is. So they need a lot of materials, and they got to buy all those materials in dollars. They're getting hit on both sides. Like I've said before, it's like throwing a 30% excise tax on them, or export tax, whatever you want to call it. And when you get in an environment like this where rates are going up, dollars going up, rates, dollar, and oil are going up, it's just not a constructive environment for stocks. Can you get weird market, you know, bounce backs or oversold bounce? Sure, on a technical basis, but on a fundamental basis, when the three horsemen of the financial apocalypse are running, and those are the three, credit issuance going down, I mean, guys, it is what it is. And you got to start. People are like, well, that was a tough month or two. You're looking at the, what is the NASDAQ? Still up 26%. This is asinine. I've never seen a market, in my opinion. Now, I've seen markets more overpriced before. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I have never seen a market more divergent. Now, it's tracking that way, right? I mean, NASDAQ's pulled off, what, 10% off its high on the year? So it's tracking that way. And the last month has not been pretty. Not a deluge yet, not a bloodletting. So, you know, maybe some sense is coming back into things. But I'll just tell you, you know, last year people were like, man, you were saying it was going to be a rough year all year long. You were saying that in fall. That was a really good call. It really wasn't. When rates are going up, oil is going up, and the dollar is going up, it's not going to be good. I mean, you don't have to be an economic genius to know it. You just book it. It ain't. Right? Those are the three biggest things that impact every economy in the world the most. I mean, there can be other things at times, but generally speaking, currency values, rates, and energy. And people are like, well, how does that impact tech? Consumers, businesses, they got less disposable profit, less disposable income, right? Everything trickles down. And you can already see it. The other thing is we're not projecting a slowdown in these corporations' growth rates. They've already slowed down. I mean, go look at Netflix over the last 2 years. Is that a company you want to pay 45 times earnings for? And that's why I say it's most disconnected. I'm not saying it means we're on a cusp of a huge crash. And the other reason why I don't think we're on the cusp of a huge crash is because it's a really weird market. Not everything is overpriced. There are pockets of really cheap stuff. So what you'd expect is just to see some rotation. But I'll continue to say, I think the downward bias is still in place. Certainly on a fundamental range. And the other thing is anecdotally, it goes perfectly with the whole retail investors being the most bullishly positioned they've ever been on record. And I mean, I'll just tell you, retail don't have the best record of picking bottoms and tops. So yeah, look, nobody does have a good one, right? But it was the story I was telling. Was I telling that on Monday? Maybe it was to my clients, but I think to illustrate the point without trying to sound like I'm insulting retail investors, I'm not. I'm really not. All my clients are retail investors. All my friends are retail, right? I'm not insulting them. It's referred to as dumb money because it's not people that do it professionally. But to illustrate that point of how bad retail's timing is, Peter Lynch ran the Magellan Fund at Fidelity for what, 25 years? And I believe if memory serves me correct, now I might have the numbers a little bit wrong, but if memory serves me correctly, over that period of time, Peter Lynch averaged, I want to say 24, it was either, I feel like it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 24 to 27% a year. While he ran that Magellan Fund for, I believe it was, I'm looking it up while I say this so I can give you the real numbers. And what happened though, oh, he ran it for 13 years. Sorry. what he did, So he ran it between 77 to 1990 and the fund averaged over 29%. But the average investor that invested in the fund made between 4 to 5%. Why? Because they thought they knew better than him when to get in and when to get out. Okay. And getting in and getting out is extraordinarily tough for professionals. And most of us get it wrong at times, which is why we hedge and manage risk as opposed to trying to time markets. Now, every once in a while, you'll be like, hey, the market's offsides. We got to jump in here or something like that. But in terms of making money, you know, if you don't believe me, there's nobody out there that is had exceptional returns over time trying to time the market. It's just, they just don't exist. They were using something else. It may look like market timing, but it's not. Right? If it's rules based, it's not market timing. Right? Truly. But most retail investors don't have rule based. So they'd get in and out of a fund that averaged 29% a year and they made 4 to 5. So I think that dynamic is playing out. And it really, to me, it is really the only thing that is explaining a lot of these asset moves, because you're looking at a day like today. Now, we were oversold coming into today, so the market's not getting killed doesn't really surprise me. That being said, you look at the bids coming in on some of this stuff individually instead of the ETFs. People are out there bidding that stuff up on an individual basis. And I just have to believe the majority of that's retail, because on a day like today, you know, if you know what to look for, if you do this for a living, in a day like today, it's kind of like you have your hands over your eyes and you're looking through your fingers, because when you see rates up that aggressively, oil up 4% and the dollar index surging like that at the same time, it's just a violent, nasty cocktail for economies and markets. So, yeah, we'll have to see. No real news out today. There's news about Biden. You know, people are reporting Biden breaking the picket line like that was a big deal. I don't think that matters at all. I'm not saying I agree with it. Don't disagree with it. I'm just saying it's a non sequitur. We didn't really have any big data announced today. There wasn't really anything too big. I think right now you've got, for whatever reason, 13,000. Now, you're going to hear me also talk more about the NASDAQ. And in our profession, usually that's shunned upon. It's kind of like talking about the Dow. The real index you want to look at is the S&P 500. Why am I looking at the NASDAQ exclusively? Because it's everybody's darling, and the biggest companies in the S&P are in the NASDAQ. And wherever the NASDAQ goes, the S&P is going with it. So in my opinion, and we've been saying this for the last 2 years, there's something that was unique about this cycle. What's interesting is that all last year we were navigating it. We didn't have a great year. We were down, our stock portfolios were down 10. So, you know, no great digs, but certainly outperformed all the indexes by a pretty wide margin. Would have liked to have been positive. Truthfully, we got probably hedged a little too aggressively, especially in the second half last year. But what the dynamic that is occurring right now, like I said, in my opinion, when you see the activity, when you see what's going on, it just really seems like it's the retailer one-off investor that's kind of keeping things here. And getting back to what I was saying about the NASDAQ, the reason we're keying that is because that's what everybody's trading. Oh, no, you got to look at the S&P 500. And what we used last year, and I got in several debates with some of my buddies, but last year actually moved pretty technically. And I should have trusted our signals more. I would have, we'd had even better performance, better outperformance last year. But if you looked at the market via the S&P 500, there were certainly correlations and areas that mattered where you could see if it broke support here, but they were really wide and really messy. When you were navigating last year according to NASDAQ levels and support levels and resistance levels, worked like a charm, worked like a charm. And I think that's the dynamic, that until 10 companies quit making up 30% of the entire weighting of the S&P 500, I just think you need to look at it through a NASDAQ lens. And it's been successful for us. It's been much more helpful, much more clearly defined levels. They adhered to those levels a lot more. They stayed inside their ranges. It was just more accurate, and it makes sense. Look at every retail portfolio. I see a lot of them, right? They're all 30 to 50% in tech across the board. And all the names that you'd expect, right? Everybody is loaded to one side of the cart or one side of the boat. So I just think in this, for this cycle, until this market normalizes, whatever that means anymore, who really knows? But I just think until we see a significant sign change or something really change, we're going to stick with using the NASDAQ as our cue. And maybe that explained today. You have some support at 12.7 level on the NASDAQ over the last year and a half. And you've had some support and resistance around the 13.2 level. Both were minor levels. The big levels that we played off were 12,000 and 14.3. Those were pretty well established, right? You broke above 12,000 and the technical said you were going back up to 14.3. That's what happened. Okay, you break 14.3, technical saying you're going back down to 13,000. That's exactly what's happened. Okay, so the NASDAQ is the one telling the story. And you want to keep an eye on all of them, guys. But if you're doing this at home, start looking it through that lens. You know, you've learned, and traditionally, that's correct. We want to be looking, the S&P is what tells the real story. problem is it's market cap weighted. So the S&P has become almost like a miniature derivative of the Qs, NASDAQ. So that's what we want to be watching. That's probably what happened today. Nothing positive on me. You couldn't have a worse macro tape for tech today. And look, maybe that's a sign of strength. I didn't see it. It looked like volumes were a bit weak, and it seemed like pretty technically and algorithmically driven trading and retail, like I was saying. So, but I'll tell you, I think you're going to continue to see a downward bias in this market until one or more of these things pull back. If this trend stays in place, if rates keep going higher, oil keeps moving up and the dollar index keeps moving up, not only is the market not going to get rally, but if this continues, and it doesn't need to continue a bunch more, let's say the 10-year yield gets up to 4.8, dollar index hits 110, and you know what? I keep blanking out here. Dollar index hits 110. Like I said, 10-year gets up to where it's yielding 4.8, and oil's pressing 100. I think you might retest the NASDAQ lows of last year. And fundamentally, it makes sense. Here's the funny thing. When you get back to the lows of last year, you're still looking at a market trading at 18 times earnings. And with that elixir, those earnings numbers are going down. Which means if you got a market trading at 18 times earnings and over the course of the next year, earnings go down, for everything to stay the same, those multiples have to expand to the upside. So I very much think that we're at a serious test for the market. We'll see. Markets can do anything. I'm just telling you, do not bet on sustained upside until one or more of those we had the five horsemen of the apocalypse, financial apocalypse last year. The three horsemen are the main ones, though. Rates, dollar, oil. Okay. As long as though all three of those remain stable, I think this market's going to have a very tough time finding its footing. That about does it for today, guys. Again, NASDAQ was up a little bit. I think S&P was slightly negative. No, it was up 0.03, something like that, but basically flat on the day. All of the horsemen got worse, started running even faster. Tomorrow be a nice story. The other thing I will say is look for a bounce here. It's one of the reasons we trim back on our shorts. Oil has ripped. Rates have ripped. The dollar has ripped. Would it surprise me if they kept running for a bit further? No, but it also wouldn't surprise me at all if they paused here and pulled back a little bit, which would probably lend some upside, an upside move here. So our whole attitude was, you know, let's trim these hedges a little bit, trim these shorts, and see if we get a slightly better entering opportunity. But yeah, just keep your eyes on those three factors, guys. As long as they keep going up, it's going to be very hard for this market to find its footing. Anyway, as always, if you're listening to the Daily Dots and you enjoy it, please subscribe at Know Your Risk Radio Podcast. We're never going to be a paid deal. Just not what we're into doing. We manage money. That's how we make our money. So it's always going to be free. And you can get every edition of these Daily Dots, which we're going to keep doing until this cycle ends. I think we're going to just, you know, we're memorializing really historic stuff, in my opinion. And like I said, I think there's a lot of educational value in this because, you know, we've seen the longest expansion in history. And I think it's really important for investors to understand the signposts of cycles ending, which we're getting all of them right now. So I hope you take this journey with us. If you do, just go to Know Your Risk Radio Podcast. You can just Google it. Type in Know Your Risk Radio into Spotify, Apple iTunes, any single podcast site will get it. And do me a favor. We don't solicit. We don't send out stuff. We don't even check. I don't even know how many subscribers we have. I really don't. But the bigger the number gets, the easier it is to get good interviews. So go subscribe for us. You'll get an automatic issue of the Daily Dots sent to your email every single day. And then you'll get our full hour show that we do on Friday. Plus, typically, I'd say 3 out of 4 weeks, we try to have a guest interview in there. Yeah, you'll get all of that just for subscribing to the podcast. So thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. I don't think Chase is going to, Chase gets home tomorrow. So it'll be just me by my lonesome, but he and I will be back at, no, he'll be doing it alone on Monday. I'm going to be out of the office that day, but both of us will be back on Tuesday. Anyway, thanks for listening. And like I said, you can go to Know Your Risk Radio Podcast, download and subscribe there. So hopefully you'll take this journey with us. Anyway, thank you for listening. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio Podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.